You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Last week, Donald Trump managed to find the time to tweet about Pride Month for the first time since he was elected president. In between dismantling our democracy, watching Fox News, and attacking a woman of color, HRH Meghan Markle this time, Trump tweeted this: "As we celebrate LGBT Pride Month and recognize the outstanding contributions LGBT people have made to our great nation, let us also stand in solidarity with the many LGBT people who live in dozens of countries worldwide that punish, imprison, and even execute individuals on the basis of their sexual orientations. That would include countries like Saudi Arabia, which Trump is busily selling arms to and palling around with." But of course, the most shocking thing in that tweet was the word "we." As we celebrate? We, motherfucker? As Michelangelo Signorelli detailed in a piece at the Daily Beast, since taking office, Donald Trump has banned trans people from serving in the military, backed a so-called conscience rule that allows doctors, nurses, and EMTs to refuse to serve LGBT people if, you know, not letting a gay man or a trans woman bleed to death in the street or an ER waiting room violates their religious beliefs. He backed a new rule allowing homeless shelters to turn away trans people being likelier to experience homelessness than cis people, moved to strip protections from the Affordable Care Act that bar discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. He's also moved to lift a regulation that prevents federally funded adoption agencies from discriminating against same-sex couples. Those agencies funded in part, of course, with the tax dollars of same-sex couples. He's denied citizenship to the children of same-sex couples born via surrogacy abroad. And in addition to selecting an anti-LGBT bigot as his running mate, Mike fucking Pence, a man who, according to Trump himself, wants to hang gay people, Trump has appointed scores of anti-LGBT bigots to lifetime appointments on the federal courts. In addition to overturning Roe, it is highly likely that the Trump-McConnell pact, illegitimate, compromised, and politicized Supreme Court will overturn Obergefell, the 2015 decision that legalized same-sex marriage in all 50 states. Donald Trump, celebrating Pride Month for the first time since being elected president, is a little like David Duke celebrating Juneteenth. Given his record, who would fall for that? Not queer people, not us. But that tweet wasn't meant for us. It was meant for straight people, straight voters, and straight members of the media who will read that tweet and write something credulous in the run-up to 2020 about Trump's quote-unquote stated support for LGBT rights and how that quote-unquote complicates his record on LGBT rights. This isn't a mixed record, as Signorelli warns the media at the Daily Beast in his long and terrific piece. It is brutal and abhorrent, Trump's record, and that is something reporters must be clear about no matter what Trump says on Twitter or in a Fox News interview, a campaign speech, or anywhere else. Trump's Pride Month tweet is a little like that ex-gay march in D.C. last weekend that attracted tens of participants. The laughable ex-gay movement, the "Jesus slapped the dick out of my mouth and he can slap the dick out of your mouth too" crowd, that crowd of tens, they're not trying to reach gay people with the message that they can, with Jesus's help, choose to be straight. They're trying to reach straight people with that message still. And the message they're trying to send to straight people is this: this whole issue, this whole controversy, all this fighting about gay rights, it could all be over tomorrow. It could be over today if gay people would just stop being gay. Which is a little like arguing that we can solve anti-Semitism by getting rid of the Jews. The ex-gay movement is designed to allow people to oppose gay rights while telling themselves they don't actually hate gay people. They love gay people so much they want to rescue them from gayness and get rid of gay people. People don't like to think of themselves as bigoted. And there are some people out there, a significant percentage of straight people, who want to vote for Trump without feeling like they're backing someone who's attacking their gay, lesbian, bi, and trans coworkers, neighbors, and children. And that's what Trump's tweet is about: creating ambiguity, providing a tiny fig leaf of cover, and scooping up the votes of that small subset of straight people most of them Fox News viewers, who want to back Trump and be able to claim at the same time at Thanksgiving dinner that they aren't hurting their gay children or grandchildren or that sweet Shepard Smith guy. Trump celebrating Pride Month? Yeah, I don't believe it. And neither does Michael Brown, an evangelical Christian activist, writer, preacher, and bigot. He told his followers in a column, his followers being anti-LGBT bigots, one and all, that they shouldn't be alarmed by Trump's tweet. Trump has done more to oppose LGBT activism than support it, Brown wrote. Trump has no problem celebrating LGBT pride in a tweet while at the same time opposing LGBT civil equality. As much as it pains me to say this, I agree with Michael Brown. Trump has no problem lying his fucking face off during Pride Month and every other month of the year. I'm not going to tell you, listener, not to fall for this because I know that you, a listener of my program, wouldn't fall for this. But you may have relatives, you may have friends, you may have parents or grandparents who are at risk of falling for this. 2020, November, it's coming up. If you have relatives who claim that they support you and also want to support this fucking president, you need to get in their faces and do some screaming and yelling now. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro free edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as much show, more questions, more answers, and more guests, and no ads. Go to savagelovecast.com to subscribe. Sean Kapton, freelance journalist, joins us to discuss where people have gone after Tumblr kicked off NSFW. Kicked off adult content, kicked off porn. Where did people wind up going? What's the new Tumblr? Sean Kapton joins us to walk us through that. This episode is brought to you by Harry's. They make the best razors you will ever shave with. Head to harrys.com/savage to help the Trevor Project by snagging one of their Shave with Pride sets. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Simple Health, convenient and affordable care, which provides online birth control prescriptions and delivery. Prescriptions are usually $20, but Simple Health is offering you a prescription for free. Just go to simplehealth.com/savage or enter the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a gay man in my late 20s living in the Pacific Northwest. I've spent the last couple of years in therapy kind of working through some general like dating and relationship anxieties that I have. And I've definitely gotten a better handle and understanding of myself with this. And as I have, I've kind of recently realized that I might be able. I honestly can't really remember a time I ever felt romantic feelings towards someone. And it's like kind of a blank hole when I think about it. And I'm processing this since like the whole idea of ending up in a romantic relationship is kind of ingrained into my whole like identity and future self. But like the issue I'm kind of having right now is that everything I read online with like people who are aromantic are also asexual, which makes sense. But I still definitely identify as homosexual. Like I still feel sexual attraction to men. Like that's not in question. And I really haven't been able to find any resources online for people who identify as aromantic and homosexual. So I guess my question to you is if you have any like advice or knowledge or if you've talked to anyone who is like homosexual and asexual, or if you could throw this out to your listeners to see if someone else might identify this way and have some advice, that would be great.
Sometimes I think aromantics encounter more skepticism and stigma of a certain sort than even asexuals do, although aromantics are believed to be or placed on the asexual spectrum. An aromantic is a person with no interest in a romantic relationship. Just as some asexuals want to have romantic relationships, they want intimacy, they want even cuddling and some kissing and holding, they just don't want sex. There are people out there who want the sex, but they don't want the intimacy or the romantic attachment, the cuddling, the kissing, all the rest of it that comes bundled with an ongoing sexual relationship. An aromantic is not interested in any of that. And we look at people who are interested in sex but not interested in relationships and we think sex monster. We think damaged in some fundamental way. And a lot of people struggle with the same issues that you, caller, struggled with. This isn't what you wanted, a romantic relationship. This is what you should want, the culture told you. You should want a romantic commitment. You should want a partner. If that is what you want, if you want the thing the culture is telling you you're supposed to want, well, Yahtzee, you win, and you're not going to feel a lot of conflict. And it's easy to say, if that's not the thing that you want, okay, great, you don't have to have it. But a lot of people out there want the things they were told they're supposed to want, the things they were told good people do want. And we're told good people don't just want to have sex, don't just want to blow loads in, on, near others, particularly of the same sex. Good people want to do that dirty, disgusting sex thing in the context of a romantic, committed relationship that exonerates you for all the dirty sex things that you want to do. So it can take a person a while to really sift through what I was told I want, what it is I do want, and whether what I'm going for right now is not what I want, but what I've been told I'm supposed to want and what good people want. And it sounds like you've reached the end of that sifting process, that self-assessment. And you've concluded you want sex. You want a lot of gay sex. You don't want a relationship. Well, that's going to be a little easier for you than it would be for a straight guy. Dick's on tap everywhere. Dick is in great supply. If you put it out there that you are interested in friends with benefit situations, you're interested in one-offs or hookups, you're not interested in a relationship, you will get offers. Because you know that zap the culture puts on your head? This is what you're supposed to want. Whatever dose of that you got, women got a much more intense radioactive dose. It can take women a lot longer to realize that what they've been trying to get is not what they wanted, but what they were told they ought to want and should want and good people want. So finding women whose desires align with your own is going to be harder than finding dudes whose desires align with your own. I'm not saying you should go out there and look for other aromantically identified gay dudes. You just look for gay dudes and you will find some aromantic gay dudes. Probably couldn't put that word to it, but it's how they function. It's how they roll. You can also find plenty of gay dudes out there who are romantic, who are in committed romantic relationships that are not exclusive, who don't want any romantic attachments on the side, but they do want sex with other guys on the side. And you are a perfect candidate for that kind of sex because you are not going to catch feelings and want to become their third, or become that dude who's already married or partnered with somebody else, become his one and only. You're not going to want that. So you're a pretty safe guy for a partnered dude to play with. But yeah, gay people, tiny percentage of the population. People on the asexual spectrum, tiny, tiny percentage, much smaller percentage of the population. People who are gay and on the asexual spectrum, oh my God, an infinitesimally small segment of the population. So there probably aren't going to be a lot of resources out there for the sexually active aromantic gay man. If there are and I don't know about them and somebody would like to call and share that info with us, we will put it on a future show. But I don't think you need a self-help group. You know what you want. You know who you are. You've been through therapy. You've worked it out. You've parsed your desires and your interests. And now you just need to get the fuck on with it. Stop worrying about how you identify. Stop looking around for a support group. And get out there and be honest with the guys that you're interested in being sexual with about your disinterest and any sort of romantic attachment, and you'll be fine.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling from Florida. Question is, so me and my husband have been considering a threesome, and the problem is, I'm black, he's white. Mostly, I'm interested in white guys, and definitely he's interested in black guys. How do we approach that situation? Because I'm not really interested in anyone he's really interested in. What would your advice be for that?
My advice would be not to consider a threesome singular, but to consider threesomes plural. Look to the straight folks, those straight heterosexual couples out there who are having three-ways. Maybe one three-way is MMF, two dudes and the woman. And the next three-way is FFM, two women and the dude. And the straight couple who's interested in having three-ways, neither is going to be attracted to the same very special guest star equally or at all. And so they alternate very special guest stars, the highly evolved straight couples out there having three-ways. Or one time she gets two dudes focusing all their attentions on her. Next time or another time, she gets two dudes focusing all of their time and attention on him. So what you do is you get out there and you find the white guy you'd like to have a three-way with, and those two white guys focus all their time and attention on you during that first or second three-way. The other time, the previous time, or the next time, you find a black dude that your husband's into, and you two black dudes focus all your time and attention on your husband. And you take turns like that highly evolved, completely heterosexual couple who are somehow able to have three-ways. You're a highly evolved gay couple. You can do this. You can have three-ways. You just need to have more than one. You want to try out a great product while also supporting an amazing cause? Join with Harry's, the grooming company that's dedicated to giving back. This Pride, they're releasing a limited edition Shave with Pride set. 100% of profits will go to the Trevor Project to reach over 80,000 LGBTQ plus youth in crisis. Go to harrys.com/savage to help support the Trevor Project and treat yourself to a close, comfortable shave. My Harry's razor is really great, and having them support the Trevor Project makes me love them all the more. Harry's founders started the company because they believe everyone deserves a great shave at a fair price. That's why they make quality, durable blades at a fair price, just $2 per blade. To keep prices low, they cut out the middleman. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making some of the best razor blades in the world for 99 years. Now they can provide great quality at factory direct prices. Harry sets aside 1% of all sales to nonprofit organizations that provide access to mental health care. Get the Shave with Pride set this Pride season. It comes with everything you need for a great shave, a one-of-a-kind iridescent handle with 5 German-engineered blades, lubricating strip and precision trimmer, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover, all beautifully packaged in a limited edition box designed by artist Jose Antonio Roda. Head to harrys.com/savage to help the Trevor Project do their important work with queer youth by snagging one of these special sets from Harry's while supplies last.
Hi, Dan. 24-year-old straight guy calling. I just want to say first, like, I don't have any prior relationship experience, never had sex or even kissed someone. And I'm not totally confident in what I would want a relationship either. I've also suffered from depression and social anxiety. It has caused me to lose some friendships in the past. But recently I've gotten on medication, been seeing therapists for quite a while. And even though I still live with my parents, I am a recent graduate and I'm actively working, saving up money to move out. But recently I started talking to a woman who's my age and she's a single parent. I was wondering, sort of with the context of my lack of experience in mental health, would be, you know, I wouldn't be mature enough, so to speak, to handle dating a single parent. Am I basically jumping into the deep end with a first relationship like this? I do know that your advice is to, you know, usually hold off meeting the kid until things appear to be more shaping up to be long term and committed. But this woman is related to a family friend. And as such, during the summer, I would see both her and her toddler fairly frequently. So if I do pursue a relationship with them, how would you suggest being distant enough with the child so that I wouldn't cause any emotional trauma or distress if things didn't work out?
It's not so much that you're jumping into the deep end of the pool. I think the problem here is you're way out over your skis to jump to a different aerobic activity. You don't mention that there's been any interest on her part that's been expressed. Maybe that was just an omission, and maybe she's interested in perhaps dating you. Maybe that's been made clear to you by mutual friends. Maybe there's some spark there. But even if that has been established and there is a romantic interest, you're still gaming this out a little too far into the future. What you need to do, if there's mutual interest, is spend some time with her alone. Go on a few dates. Don't worry about how it's going to impact her toddler at the outset. That's a question you face a little bit further down the road. If you guys go out, if you hang out, she gets a babysitter, or if your parents are willing, they look after this kid. There's a web of connection here, family, friends. She's connected by extension to your family and your parents. If they're willing to watch your kid while you guys go out, go out, go see a movie, go hang out, go have dinner. See if there's a rapport and a spark there. If there is, and you continue to date, and you begin to get serious, you're right. You don't want to bond too quickly with the kid, because if the relationship doesn't work out, which most relationships don't, and you've never had one before, so the odds that this one won't are pretty high, and that's okay. A relationship can end, as I said a million times on the show, and still work out and work out for you. This could be a training wheels, get your feet wet, returning to the pool metaphor, first experience of having a relationship. It doesn't have to turn into a lifelong commitment for your getting involved with this woman to have been worth your time, to have been a benefit to you, and to have been worth her time and a benefit to her too. We're social animals. We need some sort of contact with other human beings who take an interest in us, sexually or otherwise. And you can be that person for her now, and she can be that person for you now. And that doesn't mean you're going to be those people for each other eternally. It doesn't mean you have to be those people for each other eternally. And it doesn't mean you failed if you're not those people for each other eternally. But if it goes on and you continue to date and you get more serious about her, you will have brief interactions with her kid. What you don't want to do under 6 months, really under a year, is spend a lot of time bonding with her kid. You don't want to become this very special friend who's taking the kid to the movies, taking the kid to ice cream, taking the kid to amusement parks, because then if you break up with his mother at 9 months, you're not going to see this kid again, and the kid is going to be deprived of you, somebody he bonded with, somebody who was led to expect would be playing a significant role in his life going forward. Just like you don't make premature commitments in romantic relationships to the person you're dating, and that's a bad sign and a sign of bad judgment, and a push for a premature commitment is often the sign of an abuser, you don't make a premature emotional commitment and establish that kind of bond with a child of someone that you're dating. Don't do that prematurely. But a year, year and a half down the road, you're still dating this kid's mom, then you can risk bonding. It's a little bit of a gamble, but what you're gambling on is, I do have a future with this woman, and I'm going to be a presence in this kid's life going forward for an open-ended amount of time. And I'm going to step up and I'm going to play a parental role in this kid's life. But yeah, you want to wait on that. But right now, all you need to be thinking about is asking this woman straight up out on a date. Make sure that she understands it's a date. Be unambiguous when you say, I would like to take you out on a date. Not, you want to hang out? You want to see a movie? You want to get something to eat sometime? Ask her out on a date. See how it goes. Ask her out on another one. See how it goes. Ask her out on another one. You may have some incidental interactions with her kid. You're picking her up. The kid's there with the babysitter. You can say hi, then go. That's not a problem. And then jump into this end of the pool or perform this double Lutz when the time comes, which will be a year, year and a half from now. This episode of the Savage Love Cast is brought to you by Simple Health, convenient and affordable care which provides online birth control prescriptions and delivery. Imagine no more doctor's visits, waiting rooms, or pharmacy lines. You can get birth control prescribed, renewed, and delivered from wherever you are on your schedule. Access to a doctor, insurance status, or cost should never prevent women from getting birth control. Simple Health helps cut those barriers down for all women. Birth control is a personal choice, and Simple Health is a discreet and comfortable option. There are no labels on the shipment or having to tell anyone about your sexual activity, just you and your phone at home. Simple Health only offers trusted brands of birth control. Licensed doctors help design the product, and they review every patient with rigor and care. Simple Health doctors can prescribe over 100 brands of the pill, as well as the patch or ring. They personalize a recommendation based on your health profile and personal preferences. They accept insurance, and birth control is free with most insurance plans. For those without insurance, birth control pills start at $15 a month, and delivery is free for everyone. This service is not a replacement for routine evaluations by your primary care physician or gynecologist. But it is the most convenient and comfortable way to get your birth control. The prescription is usually $20, but Simple Health is offering you a prescription for free. Just go to simplehealth.com/savage or enter the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. That's a free prescription when you go to simplehealth.com/savage or enter promo code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 40-year-old male who has been having some recent fantasies that feel kind of offensive, specifically about my tomboyish, butch-ish lesbian friends, specifically them in a more submissive role, while I'm in a more, well, not just submissive, but playing against their age gender role as actual boys, while I am something of a leather daddy in a very 70s mustache, ass with chap leather daddy. So my question really is, is this as offensive as it feels like it is? Because I feel like I'm culturally appropriating somebody else's fetishes. I'm not gay. I'm a straight male. But I kind of keep thinking about these shaven-headed women as boys submitting to me. That feels wrong.
It's not wrong to fantasize about it. It would be wrong to say something to your friend about it, to essentially lay out this impossible scenario where you're suddenly a gay 70s leather daddy with a big bushy mustache and assless chaps, and your butch lesbian friend, who is a woman, is suddenly a gay submissive male. That's impossible. That's not going to happen. And it would certainly queer your relationship with your lesbian friend if you just threw that out there or unburdened yourself or felt obligated to confess your fantasy sin by telling her about this, by coming clean, by being honest. No. You're having a weird bank shot, impossible fantasy about somebody in your life, something that is never, ever going to happen. And, you know, the human mind is infinitely perverse and we can go anywhere and do anything in our fantasies. But in addition to having a right to our fantasies, we have an obligation to have filters. And this is a moment where you need a, not even a good filter, just a fucking common sense, good judgment filter that says, yeah, I probably am not going to say something about that. Don't know where that came from. It's not going anywhere because I am a straight guy and not a 70s leather daddy. And my butch lesbian friend is not a gay boy and is certainly not interested in me. And so it's never going anywhere. So we're just going to let it rattle around in my erotic imagination until it is replaced by some other random sudden seizure of my erotic imagination by some random outside stimuli that resulted in blah, God knows what's next. But in the meantime, until that happens, until this impossible fantasy is supplanted by another one, keep your fucking mouth shut and enjoy. Enjoy your crazy secret fantasy. Beat off to your heart's content. Everybody else is, I promise you, everybody else, even people who would scold you for yours, for your inappropriate, not okay, appropriative fantasy, they have their own inappropriate, not okay, appropriative fantasies that they're furiously beating off to in private and probably feeling terrible about, which is why they're yelling at you about yours if you were foolish enough to tell someone who would yell at you about yours. I promise you, anybody who yells at other people about their fantasies is externalizing an internal conflict about their own fucked up fantasies. So yeah, keep your mouth shut and a towel handy. Y'all may have noticed it's wedding season, and I am getting lots of questions about weddings and the drama that inevitably swirls around them. But none of you have asked me what the best wedding present is. But I'm going to tell you anyway, get those newlyweds or about to be newlyweds some Bull and Branch sheets. Everything Bull and Branch makes, from bedding to blankets, is made from pure 100% organic cotton, which means their sheets and everything else start out super soft and get even softer over time. You buy direct from Bull & Branch, so you're essentially paying wholesale prices. Luxury sheets, the kind of sheets you want to give as a wedding present, can cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Bull & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everyone who tries Bull & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands of five-star reviews. Bull & Branch also only uses sustainable and responsible methods of sourcing and manufacturing, and they donate a portion of every sale to a charity that helps fight human trafficking while preserving fair prices for consumers. Shipping is free, and you can try them if you want to buy some for yourself, and trust me, you do. You can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back for a refund, but I doubt you'll even want to send them back. Still, there's no risk, therefore no reason not to give these terrific sheets a try. To get you started, right now, my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com when you use the promo code SAVAGE. That's B-O-L-L and branch.com, promo code SAVAGE. bollandbranch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan, 30-year-old lesbian woman calling. So I've been seeing this woman officially for about 2 months now. It started off pretty hot and cold, but evolved into a serious monogamous relationship over the course of a month or two. I'm super into her, and she seems really into me. Recently, she left out of state to visit family, and I stopped in to check on her place and her dogs. When I opened the drawer to her bathroom to get floss, I found an open notebook, and curiosity got the best of me, which I hate to admit, and I opened it. Inside, I read that she really likes me but doesn't want to touch me. Now, she wrote this towards the beginning of our relationship, and about 2 months have passed. The thing is, her actions are much different now. She seems super into me, she seems super into touching me, and she seems super into me touching her. But sometimes I do notice that she will get high or drunk before sex, which honestly is a turn on for me. It's not to the point of inebriation or that she can't function, just to kind of loosen up. But now I wonder, is she faking it? Is she getting high and or drunk to be able to sleep with me? I can go on pretending I never read this, but I'm wondering if I should talk to her and out myself for reading her journal, or if I should just pretend like everything's okay. Honestly, I'm not sure that I can, given our history. Just kind of worried that maybe she's just really not that into me, and she's just faking it to appease me. I know I dug myself into this hole, just not sure what to do.
A general point before we talk about the specifics of your situation. We're always faulting people for not going on dates or not contemplating perhaps accepting an offer for sex from someone that they're not initially physically attracted to, someone who isn't their physical ideal. And what we'd like to see is more people willing to see the person inside, see past the superficial physical traits and love the person and not the body. And then when someone does that, and this may be a case where someone did that, somebody, maybe this woman initially wasn't attracted to you, but the more she got to know you, the better she got to know you, a spark came. And she suddenly was able to transcend whatever it was about you that initially wasn't ideal, didn't appeal to her, and she found out what it was about you that turned her on and tapped into it. And now she, from the sounds of things, enjoys having sex with you and sometimes enjoys getting a little drunk or high before sex, which people do all the time, even with people that they're attracted to. People don't only drink or have a little hit of pot before they have sex to power through sex with someone they're not into. They do that to enhance sex, to loosen up and enhance sex with someone they are into. The problem here for you going forward is that you found an open notebook in her bathroom, and then you say, then I opened it. So I guess it wasn't an open notebook. You found a notebook in her bathroom and you opened it and you read her journal. You invaded her privacy. And in so doing, you didn't learn something that you had a right to know or that would benefit you to know. You didn't open her journal and find out she has a secret family in Omaha that she hasn't told you about, or that she's dating six other people, half of them guys, while you two are in a monogamous lesbian relationship. You didn't find that out. What you found out was at the very beginning of the relationship, because boy, you really paged back through her journal at the very beginning of this relationship a year and a half ago, she felt a little ambiguous about whether she was actually attracted to you physically in addition to being attracted to you emotionally. Now she is, and now you have to go to her and say, what's up? I can't imagine a scenario under which someone in your position is not going to address this directly, because it's going to eat at you. You need an assurance from her that what I described at the beginning of my response to you is actually what happened. And you have to be mature enough to accept that. That initially, physically, she wasn't clicking with you, but that came in time. The more she got to know you, the better she got to know you. You began to click with you physically. And the sexual component that she doubted would be there at the start kicked into gear, and now she's happy to be your girlfriend. If she tells you that, and that's likely to be true, can you accept that? Or are you going to worry for the rest of your life that she's lying to you for reasons? You don't live together. If she wanted to end the relationship, sounds like it'd be pretty simple to end the relationship. She might end the relationship after you tell her that you read a year and a half worth of her journal and invaded her privacy. But that's the risk you're going to have to run, because the only thing that's going to make you feel comfortable in this relationship, in her bed, on her body, her on yours going forward, is the reassurance that only she can provide. But you're going to have to tell her what you did wrong. And before you ask for reassurance, you're going to have to lead with an abject apology. Because what you did really fucked up this relationship, potentially. In the short term, definitely fucked up this relationship. I'm not pronouncing it dead. You guys could come through this fine, better, stronger. But for right now, this is a crisis. This is an inflection point. Good luck.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and Youth. I'm in a newly open relationship of 10 years, and we have responsibly discussed our terms of openness together. The problem is that I get turned on by talking about and sharing our experiences, and he wants a more DADT style open relationship. He seems to like the idea of it being taboo and sneaky. So how do we negotiate this?
This isn't a case where someone has to lose, where someone has to pay the price of admission, and you're either going to have to not share, or he's either going to have to share and somebody loses. This is an instance where you guys can both do your thing, where you can share. You said it turns you on to share your experiences. Share them. If it doesn't turn him off for you to share your experiences, share your experiences. It turns him on to have a secret. Well, let him have a secret. That doesn't mean he has to have a secret forever. You can share your experiences as they happen. And I think the compromise, the deal you put out in front of him is you can have your secrets, keep your secrets, but every once in a while, like every 6 months, once a year, we get super high or we, you know, have a night in a hotel where you tell me a few of your secrets from the past year and crank me up and turn me on, because it turns me on to hear your stories. So you can tell me your dirty stories once in a while. So you get to have your secrets, but I get to hear your stories, and I get to share my stories and not have to keep anything secret, and everybody wins.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 34-year-old male from the East Coast, just moved to Los Angeles about 2 months ago to pursue acting. I have a question regarding my living situation. I'm currently living with a stranger that I met from Craigslist who, up until this point, has been a fine roommate. She gave me a furnished room to live in, and so I was able to just drive out with a suitcase full of clothes, and that's all I have. So I'm not sure how much you know about life in LA, but it's actually common here for people to believe in magic. Like, if there's a parking space available on the street in front of your house when you get home, that means it's the universe telling you that you're supposed to be home, instead of just that your neighbor happened to leave a couple minutes ago to buy a six pack or something. And I'm personally pretty firmly grounded in reality and don't really get behind the woo-woo stuff, but I usually think it's just funny and it's not hurting anybody, so I just let it be. When I first got here, my roommate told me that something told her to choose my Craigslist post and that I was quote-unquote supposed to be here. And I thought that was just kind of encouraging to hear and didn't really think too much of it. And cut to 2 months later, she's had a full psychic break. These are her words. She's hearing voices constantly and has made it her mission to help people see and change their lives. A lot of her sentences now start with, "They're telling me to tell you, blah, blah, blah." It's what she wants to talk about 100% of the time, either to me or is on the phone talking about it, and it's just draining, and I find myself having to be out of the house most of the time. She knows that I'm skeptical, so she usually lets me off the hook these conversations, but keeps saying that we need to talk soon because my skepticism is draining her energy or something like that. And one caveat to this is my roommate is actually very successful in her field and has some famous friends, and apparently everyone is on board with what she's saying. And it seems like I'm the only one who isn't buying it and doesn't think that being psychic is a thing that you can be. And for what it's worth, her voices have only told me things that I already know. If she seemed to actually have some insights, I might be more inclined to at least hear her out. Dan, what do I do? I really don't want to have to find another place to live, but I feel like this situation is stealing focus from my creativity. And do you think I could be in danger? Should I try to get her help, or is this just how people on the West Coast are? I do want to be successful out here, but I really don't want to have to join a cult.
I've lived on the West Coast for almost 30 years, and it hasn't been my experience that everyone out here believes in magic. Moved here from the Midwest, where I was raised in a faith where people's mothers floated into heaven. Other people rose from the dead. Bren magically turned into wine. There was some magic in my childhood, my Midwestern childhood. There hasn't been anywhere near as much magic or bullshit in my West Coast adulthood. So please don't lump us all in with your voice hearing, psychic powers claiming, kind of aggressive roommate. We're not all like that. The dilemma here is you think this woman might have contacts that could help you professionally. That's what's really at bottom here. She's very successful. She knows some important and powerful people, and you'd like to have her on your side. Are you willing to play along with her hearing voices and telling you things you already know about yourself in order to tap into her network of powerful friends? Are you willing to do that? You could put your acting skills to use act like you believe this shit that comes out of her mouth? Sounds harmless. She's just telling you things you already know about yourself. That is what most psychics do. They figure out something about us, and then they tell us about that thing that we already kind of told them about. So while I share your belief that psychic is bullshit, that people aren't psychics, being a psychic is a thing. There are people out there who think they're psychics, who've convinced other people that they are psychics. So yeah, psychics are a thing, a bullshit thing, not even necessarily a West Coast bullshit thing. Last time I was in New York City walking through the East Village, there were a couple shingles out for psychics. If she's told you that your skepticism is draining her energy, that is a sign that you will not be her roommate for much longer if you can't play along with this bullshit. And it may be in your own self-interest to play along with this bullshit to advance your career. If you can't play along with this bullshit, and, you know, I couldn't. If I were in your shoes, I could not play along with this bullshit. I could not wipe the skeptical look off my face. I have this problem with my eyes where when they want to roll, they roll and there's no stopping them. I couldn't play along. But if you want to play along to advance your career, go for it. If you don't or you can't, find a new living situation.
Hi, Dan. I am a 28-year-old bisexual, heteroromantic female from a small Midwestern town, and I have a question about uncircumcised penises. I've never had a problem with uncircumcised penises. I've had several great experiences with them. But my most recent two, they've been kind of gross. I was dating a guy for several months, and he's such a clean person, which is what drives me crazy about this whole thing, is I know that he's very clean, but his under his foreskin was always kind of gross. And I found myself getting BV very often, and it's just very unpleasant. And I had an experience with a new person, and we were hooking up, and I went to grab his dick, and it was just, I already knew before I put like my mouth on it that it was not good. And I was just wondering, is that like a normal? Because I've had other experiences with uncircumcised penises that, you know, they were perfectly clean under there and everything was good to go. Nothing icky about it. But another thing I noticed was that the only ones that they were smaller uncircumcised penises that I've had this issue of like grossness under the foreskin. But the more larger ones that I've encountered, I never had an issue with. I don't know if those men were just cleaner overall or these two men just have dirty dicks. But I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about that.
What I have to say? I have to say that I am amazed that Nancy and I sat here together listening to your call as she ate coconut curry ramen without flinching. I don't think I could have choked that shit down while listening to your call. This isn't about uncircumcised dicks. You know that from your own personal experience. You say you've been with many guys who were uncut and never encountered this until these two guys. So this is a coincidence. You got two dirty dicks in a row, and that was a coincidence. Another coincidence, those two dirty dicks in a row, smaller than the parade of uncut cocks you were with in the past. That's a coincidence. Here are two guys who don't know how to wash themselves and haven't been washing themselves. You could have, would have, should have, I would have, could have, would have, should have in your shoes said to them, hey, you need to go wash this thing, especially if you think I'm going to put this in my mouth. Your dick stinks. Go wash it. But yeah, let's not extrapolate. You yourself, with your enormous sample size of uncut cocks, should know not to extrapolate from these two data points, these two smallish dirty dicks. Now, this is a problem for uncut guys generally because you've been with other uncut guys who did not have this problem. In the same way that Nancy did not have a problem finishing her coconut curry while listening to you talk about dirty, smegma-coated, uncut cocks. Sometimes she amazes me. All right, before we get to your response calls, your tweets. Kate Dashwood tweets, true story, when I first started listening to Savage Lovecast years ago, I was convinced it was at Fake Dan Savage singing the theme song. Maybe it is. No, it isn't, Kate. That is Tim LaFollette from the indie band The Popovers. They recorded that for us years ago when we did a call for a theme song. We are eternally grateful. Tim passed away about 10 years ago, shortly after he recorded that for us, from ALS, and he is dearly missed by his friends, family, and former bandmates, and we are very grateful to Tim Still for the awesome theme song. Ah, me tweets recently started listening to the Savage Lovecast, and I am obsessed. I'm honestly learning so much from Fake Dan Savage and the Savage Lovecast. Thank you, Ami. But you're not just learning from me, hopefully, also learning from other listeners, other callers, and all of my awesome guests. Thank you for getting on board. And finally, Dusk tweets, just heard a great Maddie Corman interview on Savage Lovecast. Thank you for creating a dialogue about a topic most people are unwilling to talk about. Love Dan's views on the importance of how relationships keep people accountable and that isolation does not help. Thank you, and thank you again to Maddie Corman for coming on the show and talking about her new play, currently running in New York, Accidentally Brave, about her experiences after her husband was arrested for possessing child pornography. The play is terrific. It's gotten terrific views. If you are in or near New York, Accidentally Brave runs through July 13th. Please go see it. And now your response calls.
Hi, this is a comment for Dan. Sex addiction came up a couple of times, and Dan, you said it wasn't a thing. I just want to push back on that a little bit. I think sex addiction very much is a thing. It's not sex that's addictive. It's that people who are susceptible to addiction can become addicted to anything, literally, but especially things that we build up a tolerance to, especially things that can change the way that we feel. And that addiction is characterized by the inability to stop doing it, even when we want to stop doing it. So yeah, it can be sex. It can be video games. It can be crack. It isn't that those things are addictive. It is that some people are susceptible to get stuck in a loop of addiction. I think that your comments that sex addiction doesn't exist, isn't a thing, is kind of unhelpful and doesn't acknowledge the lived experience of lots of potential people out there. That isn't to say that a lot of the nonsense at some of these addiction 12-step groups isn't sexphobic and that our culture isn't sexphobic, because it is. And I agree with lots of those points.
Hello, Dan. I'm listening to your most recent episode with the guy who feels entitled to sex because he bought some weed, put her parents up in a hotel room. What the actual fuck? Dan, I love you, but you did not come down hard enough on that guy. You decided to put her up in a room. You decided to enter into this relationship without sex on the table. You do not get sex unless she wants to fuck you. If you do not want to do these things for her, then don't fucking do them. You creepy asshole. No wonder she doesn't want to fuck you.
Hi, this is a response call about that unholy pile-on for that poor, sensitive yoga guy that aired in the last class. Oh my God, that guy was trying to be sensitive and not creepy. And he got this pile-on from these self-righteous, obnoxious people because he dared to notice that other people were in the class and they also have bodies. He was inherently creepy just for that. Okay, first and foremost, yoga as like a spiritual kind of practice may go back a few thousand years, but as we know it today, it's less than 100 years old. Namaste doesn't mean anything like the God in me sees the God in you. It's just a specific dialect, formal greeting. And you know, if yoga is your spiritual practice and you connect to it and it makes you feel good and center yourself and it's not about your physicality or your sexuality, that's fine. I don't want to, you know, look down on anyone else's spiritual practice. But you don't get to dogmatically and self-righteously use that as a club to pile on to this guy who absolutely doesn't deserve it because he's not some kind of Zen monk who doesn't even notice there are women in his class. Dan, I thought your advice was perfect. And yoga guy, if you're still listening and haven't turned yourself away from the world in shame, good for you for being self-aware enough to know that it might be creepy and to listen to Dan's advice to go to the coffee shop around the corner from the yoga studio and try to have some nice, non-creepy interactions with these women you see in the studio.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. I will be performing live. We will be doing Savage Love Live in San Francisco this Friday night at the Palace of Fine Arts Theater. I'll be there. Singer-songwriter Rachel Lark will be there. And Stormy Daniels will be there. We will be giving advice together, me and Stormy. You loved her when she was on the show. Come to San Francisco, Palace of Fine Arts, and see me and Stormy tackling your sex and relationship advice questions live. Now more than ever, we need to impeach the motherfucker already. Go to ITMFA.org and get your ITMFA merch, hats, t-shirts, mugs. The best thing about wearing an ITMFA t-shirt in public is people will ask you what that means. And you get to tell them, impeach the motherfucker already. It is fun, and all proceeds go to the American Civil Liberties Union, Planned Parenthood, and the International Refugee Assistance Project. And also gift ITMFA merch. So if you'd like to send an ITMFA t-shirt to, I don't know, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, you can do that too at ITMFA.org. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow freelance journalist Sean Captain on Twitter at Sean Captain. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at risk youth. And Nancy, we'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.